says that everything animate or inanimate that's within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Purport. Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down through the perfect disciplic succession of spiritual masters, beginning with the Lord himself. Since he spoke the first word of Vedic knowledge, the source of this knowledge is transcendental. The words spoken by the Lord are called apurusheya, which indicates that they are not delivered by any mundane person. A living being who lives in the mundane world has four defects. He is certain to commit mistakes. He is subject to illusion. He has a propensity to cheat others, and his senses are imperfect. No one with these four imperfections can deliver perfect knowledge. The Vedas are not produced by such an imperfect creature. Vedic knowledge was originally imparted by the Lord into the heart of Brahma, the first created living being, and Brahma in his turn disseminated this knowledge to his sons and disciples who have handed it down through history. Since the Lord is Purnam, all-perfect, there is no possibility of his being subjected to the laws of material nature, which he controls. However, both the living entities and inanimate objects are controlled by the laws of nature and ultimately by the Lord's potency. This Ishopanishad is part of the Yajurveda, and consequently it contains information containing the proprietorship of all things existing within the universe. The Lord's proprietorship over everything within the universe is confirmed in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where para and apara prakriti are discussed. The elements of nature, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, all belong to the Lord's inferior material energy, apara prakriti. Whereas the living being, the organic energy, is his superior energy, para prakriti. Both of these prakritis or energies are emanations from the Lord, and ultimately, he is the controller of everything that exists. There is nothing in the universe that does not belong to either the para or apara prakriti. Therefore, everything is the property of the Supreme Being. Because the Supreme Being, the Absolute Personality of God, it is the complete person, he has complete and perfect intelligence to adjust everything by means of his different potencies. The Supreme Being is often compared to a fire, and everything organic or inorganic is compared to the heat and light of that fire. Just as fire distributes energy in the form of heat and light, the Lord displays his energy in different ways. He thus remains the ultimate controller, sustainer, and dictator of everything. He is the possessor of all potencies, the knower of everything, and the benefactor of everyone. He is full of inconceivable opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that except for the Lord, no one is a proprietor of anything. One should accept only those things that are set aside by the Lord as his quota. The cow, for instance, gives milk, but she does not drink that milk. She eats grass and straw, and her milk is designated as food for human beings. Such is the arrangement of the Lord. Thus, we should be satisfied with those things that he has kindly set aside for us, and we should always consider to whom those things we possess actually belong. Take, for example, our dwelling, which is made of earth, wood, stone, iron, cement, and so many other material things. If we think in terms of Sri Ishopanishad, we must know that we cannot produce any of these building materials ourselves. We can simply bring them together and transform them into different shapes by our labor. A laborer cannot claim to be a proprietor of a thing just because he has worked hard to manufacture it. In modern society, there's always a great quarrel between the laborers and the capitalists. This quarrel has taken an international shape, and the world is in danger. Men face one another in enmity and snarl just like cats and dogs. Sri Ishopanishad cannot give advice to the cats and dogs, but can deliver the message of Godhead to man through the bona fide acharyas, holy teachers. The human race should take the Vedic version of Sri Ishopanishad and not quarrel over material possessions. One must be satisfied with whatever privileges are given to him by the mercy of the Lord. There can be no peace if the communists or capitalists or any other party claims proprietorship over the resources of nature, which are entirely the property of the Lord. The capitalist cannot curb the communist simply by political maneuvering, nor can the communist defeat the capitalist simply by fighting for stolen bread. If they do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the property they claim to be their own is stolen. Consequently, they will be liable to punishment by the laws of nature. Nuclear bombs are in the hands of both communists and capitalists, and if both do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that these bombs will ultimately ruin both parties. Thus, in order to save themselves and bring peace to the world, both parties must follow the instructions of Sri Upanishad. Human beings are not meant to quarrel like cats and dogs. They must be intelligent enough to realize the importance and aim of human life. The Vedic literature is meant for humanity and not for cats and dogs. Cats and dogs can kill other animals for food without incurring sin. But if a man kills an animal for the satisfaction of his uncontrolled taste buds, he is responsible for breaking the laws of nature. Consequently, he must be punished. The standard of life for human beings cannot be applied to animals. The tiger does not eat rice and wheat or drink cow's milk because he has been given food in the shape of animal flesh. Among the many animals and birds, some are vegetarian and others are carnivorous, but none of them transgress the laws of nature which have been ordained by the will of the Lord. Animals, birds, reptiles, and other lower forms strictly adhere to the laws of nature. Therefore, there is no question of sin for them, nor are the Vedic instructions meant for them. Human life alone is a life of responsibility. It is wrong, however, to think that simply by becoming a vegetarian one can avoid transgressing the laws of nature. Vegetables also have life, and while it is nature's law that one living being is meant to feed on another, for human beings the point is to recognize the Supreme Lord. Ahastani sahastanam aparani chatuspanam palgani tatramahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. You know the verse? Is it in there? Page 191. Great verse. Describes the whole material world. 191. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatushpadam palguni tatramahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. This was spoken by Narada Muni to Yudhisthira. Ahastani, those who are devoid of hands. Sahastanam. Boy, think about it. We have hands, right? Who gave them to us? Our hands are doing things all the time, and we just take it for granted. But actually, they're awarded to us by the Lord. Sahastanam, of those who are endowed with hands. Apadani, those who are devoid of legs. Chatushpadam, those who have four legs. Palguni, those who are weak. Tatra, there. Mahatam, of the powerful. Jivo, jivasya jivanam, one. The general rule holds that one living being is food for another. It's the law of the material world. Jivo, jivasya jivanam. Thus, one should not be proud of being a strict vegetarian. Animals do not have developed consciousness by which to recognize the Lord. But a human being is sufficiently intelligent to take lessons from the Vedic literature and thereby know how the laws of nature are working and derive profit out of such knowledge. If a man neglects the instructions of the Vedic literature, his life becomes very risky. A human being is therefore required to recognize the authority of the Supreme Lord and become his devotee. He must offer everything for the Lord's service and partake only of the remnants of food offered to the Lord. This will enable him to discharge his duty properly. In the material world, in the Bhagavad Gita 9:26, the Lord directly states that he accepts vegetarian food from the hands of his pure devotee. Who knows the verse? Go ahead. Yome bhaktya prayashyati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami pariyatapana. So Malini quoted this verse in her seminar on prasadam, pointed out that he uses the word bhakti twice in this verse, right? Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami bhaktita. Krishna doesn't really take the food stuff, he takes the bhakti that's behind it. There's one time when Krishna came to Hastinapur to settle this fight that was going on before the war, before the Kurukshetra battle. he came there, and Duryodhan wanted to make a big feast for him. He made a feast fit for a king and invited Krishna. Krishna wasn't interested, said no thanks. But he went to Vidura's house. Yeah, and at Vidura's house, he ate bananas, right? Wrong, he ate the peel. Because she was in so much ecstasy when he came that Krishna was getting the peel and he was eating them. And because out of love, he was taking these things. So it's this love, this bhakti that Krishna accepts. If one offers a little water, yes.
What's the verse again? Did she?
Patram pushpam palam doyam. 9:26, Bhagavad Gita.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Therefore, a human being should not only become a strict vegetarian, but should also become a devotee of the Lord, offer the Lord all his food, and then partake of such prasad, or the mercy of God. Yeah, you know, if you live in a house where everything's offered to Gorni Thai, then you'll have supernatural intelligence to understand spiritual knowledge. As I was staying with a friend, you know, he offers everything to the Lord on the altar. And I was just saying how nice it was staying at his house and stuff. He says, yeah, because you've been taking Gorni Thai prasad all this time. And anywhere you go, if you take prasadam, it's so nice. If you go, you travel in India and you go to the different temples, there's Mahaprasad you can get from the Lord. We used to go to this mandir in Madras. And it's the Parthasarathi mandir in Triplicane. And they have these idli, special kind of idli. It's made in a loaf, actually, with peppercorns in it. They offer to the Lord. And we travel one day overnight on the train just to go there and buy some of that prasad to travel with. It was so nice. But this, just getting the remnants of the Lord's foodstuff that purifies the intelligence, and this act of offering everything to the Lord, this is simple process of bhakti yoga by which one can become fully Krishna conscious, just offering all one's food to the Lord. Only those who act in this way can properly discharge the duties of human life. Those who do not offer their food to the Lord eat nothing but sin and subject themselves to various types of distress, which are the result of a sin. 3:13, Bhagavad Gita 3:13, who knows the verse? Yagnashista Shita Santo Muchante Sarva Kilbishai. 3:13, let's look it up. Devotees are released. Yagnashista Shina Santo Muchante Sarva Kilbishai Bunjate Tetugam Papa Yepa Chantiatma Karana. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Page 160. Jagnashishta, a food taken after performance of yajna. Santa. Who's Santa? Huh? Santa means the devotees. Just like Santa Claus. He's the saint. Muchante. They get relief. Sarva. All kinds of kilbishai, of sins. Bunjite. Enjoys. Those who enjoy that which has not been prepared. Agam. Grievous sin. They get pap. So just by eating the remnants of the Lord's food that we get purified, and the finer tissues of the brain are developed so that one can understand spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, we ruin the human form of life by accumulating sin. If you're sinful, you can't understand God. Yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva mohanir mukta bhajanti mam judavrata. Those who have been cleared from all sins and they've accumulated pious credits in their past lives and in this life, they can develop this full determination to move forward in spiritual life. Oh, it's so important. Because we have to have this determination to rise above Maya, to rise above the modes of material nature. Maya is so powerful because she's divine. And we've been interacting with this Mayic divine energy since time immemorial. So we're fully addicted to that. So to get out of that situation, to rise above that, requires fine intelligence. And that could be attained by taking the remnants of food from the Lord. And only those who are extraordinarily fortunate can get this remnants of food. The root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature through disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord. Disobeying the laws of nature or the order of the Lord brings ruin to a human being. Conversely, one who is sober, who knows the laws of nature, and who is not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion, is sure to be recognized by the Lord and thus become eligible to go back to Godhead, back to the eternal home. So let's just talk a little bit about this for a minute. The root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature through disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord. Who can comment on that? The root of sin. It's from disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord. Who would like to make a comment on that? What it means to disregard the proprietorship of the Lord. And you can use the microphone to make your comments. Melanie would like to say, pass her the mic.
Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of God and Krishna. And if we think that I own this or I can use it for my satisfaction, that is where, this is what it said, in this paragraph it is said that that's the root of the sin. If we think that everything belongs to Krishna and we are just trying to serve him, even accepting prasadam or even eating something is maintaining this body which is used for the service of Krishna, then no sin is incurred. But if we think that this belongs to me and I am the proprietor of it, then we start incurring sin as in this. We buy because of karma.
How is it that the root of all sin is this disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord? How does that become the root of all sin? I think you kind of said it a little bit, right? Thank you very much.
It's like a child and a mother.
Microphone. Because there's devotees in the kitchen need to hear.
What makes me think of a... Is this on?
Yes, it's on. Just speak into it.
Makes me think of like a child and a mother.
One more.
Or father and his son. You know, the father has given us instruction. You know, he's today I was talking to somebody about, you know, just some situations that I've been going through. I went to court today and some different situations that I see that are... I can see the positive behind them and I can see that Krishna is in control of them. But a lot of times I find that I try to believe that, you know, I think I'm the controller, so these problems are mine. But then to see that Krishna is behind them, and it's actually my father who loves me, who's actually providing this so that I can eventually go back home. So I believe the root is that us like little children, like not listening to our father.
Nice point. Yeah, it's a practical thing that actually... The Lord is the proprietor of everything, and he is controlling everything. And when we try to independently take these things, or as a matter of fact, when we see anything independent of the Lord, then it's described in the Bhagavatam, Bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syad ishadape tasya viparya yosmitihi. Lord Chaitanya spoke this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, which Rakshit Prabhu is fast closing in on. Bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syad. Syad means that it arises. What arises? Bhayam. Fear. Dvitiya means a vision separate from that of seeing that actually everything belongs to the Lord and that I belong to the Lord and everything within my vision everywhere is actually controlled and owned by the Lord. When I see something separate from that, then I become very fearful because I see I'm in a dream world, actually. I'm in an illusory state when I see something separate from the Lord. Who knows a verse that we chant on Saturday morning regularly that claims that in which Krishna, speaking to Brahma, now I'm giving it all away, has stated much the same thing, that those things which are in relationship with him are real. And those things that have no relationship or are seen as having no relationship with him are known as Maya. What is Maya? We just say it like it's illusion, right? But what, can you feel it, what Maya is? Every day, it's like we're living in a dream, actually. We think, I grew up and my parents taught me English and I'm from California, so I think I'm an English-speaking California man. And a cat, he's raised as a cat and, walks around thinking I'm a cat. And somebody else is thinking I'm a dog because he's stuck in a dog body. But a self-realized person, naiva kinchit kuro miti yukto manye tatatva vit pashyan shrinvan shrisan jigran ashnan gashan supan shvasan pralapan vishyan grinan unmishan nimishan api indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti dharayan. He knows that when he's going through all the activities of the senses are going on, he knows he's aloof from them. Whether he's seeing, touching, hearing, smelling, moving about, breathing. And he also knows I'm not an English speaker. I'm just involved with this karmic situation from my previous life. And now I'm placed in this ocean of Maya. And you found the verse? So rite means without, right? Ritir artam. Artam means value. So ritir artam. Yet pratiyeta, na pratiyeta chatmani. Krishna tells Brahma, this is one of the essential verses, the chatur shloki, Bhagavatam. He said, rite artam, without value. You want something without value? Dharmesh, you want something without value? No. No, thank you. He doesn't want it. Rite artam, good choice. No one does, but we make a mistake. We think this has value. But Krishna says, no value. Ritir artam yet pratiyeta. Give us the, guide us through the words for word. Yet pratiyeta. Ritir artam, without value.
Yet is that which. Yet is that which pratiyeta appears to be.
Oh, appears to be. Okay. Ritir artam yet pratiyeta na pratiyeta cha atmani. Cha-atmani means in relationship to the Supreme Self. It means to Krishna, right? If we see something that, and we don't see its relationship to Krishna, then it has no value. And? Yat pratiyeta, pratertam yat pratiyeta, na pratiyeta cha-atmani, tadvidyad atmano mayam. You should know, he says, this is mayam. Yata bhaso yata tamaha. It's like reflection within the darkness. You're getting the reflection. And it doesn't exist, actually, Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Nasato vidite bhavo, nabhavo vidite sata. Those things that exist always exist. And those things that don't exist, they don't exist. They're only passing phantasmagoria. But we connect ourselves with them and we go through all kinds of changes because of it. Just like in a dream. At night we're dreaming. In the daytime, we're dreaming. It's a fact. At night, we're dreaming. In the daytime, it just changes a little less quickly in the daytime. And as I gave the example before, in the dream, you go to embrace some beautiful person, and then all of a sudden, he or she turns into an ugly hag or a monster. And, ah! And in the daytime, same thing happens, only it just takes longer. Right? This is a fact. Everything's changing on this material level. We think, oh, it's this, and then it changes into something else. But that's because it doesn't really exist in a tangible form. That which exists in a tangible form is on the spiritual side. And that's real. And those things one should take shelter of. Otherwise, bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syad isharape tasya viparya yosmiti, that this is the deluded mentality of being in the material world, that I accept things that are phantasmagoric. They're only changing. They're only passing through. And I discount the reality. But the reason we accept it as real is because it's a reflection of the real. It looks real. And we've been mistaken since time immemorial accepting the illusion to be real. Yes.
But these things can be...
Microphone. Mm-hmm. We have to train you up to use the microphone.
This material energy that is Krishna's and eternal as well, correct? If we see it as Krishna, then it is real. I remember in a class once somebody said something new about it all being an illusion, and you said, I remember this a long time ago, you said, well, come over here and I'll sock you in the arm and see how it feels. And you were kind of, it's real too, correct?
Correct. It's just, it's illusory in the sense that it's non-permanent. It won't persist. It won't stay. So it's explained by Uddhava to Vidura, like in a dream, you might see your head being cut off in a dream. But how can you see your head being cut off? It's because actually, if your head was cut off, then you wouldn't be able to see it. And you see someone says, Hare Krishna, welcome. So I cut your head off and I'll hang it on the hook, and you're standing there ghastly watching this ghastly scene, seeing that your head run. But that's not possible that it could happen like that. But you suffer if someone's watching you in the dream and, you're sweating and your rapid eye motion and you're going through that difficult time. And so it's not that you're not suffering. Actually, you are. So that conversation came up many years ago. Someone said, well, then it's your suffering's illusion. No, because actually you're experiencing that suffering at that time. Even though it's temporary, you're still suffering. But you can come out of that, Krishna says, by turning your face toward the real thing, towards the substance. And so this Ishavasya spirit is to understand, actually, Krishna's connection to everything. Krishna is connected to everything. Every atom within the universe is coming from him. The advanced devotee sees Krishna's hand within everything and everywhere, and always stays connected with Krishna. So then there's safety. Then we feel actual shelter. And when we go on strike, the material world is one big strike. And one time all the senses of the body, they went on strike because they said, we're spending all this time feeding the stomach. And they were all complaining because the hand said, it wasn't for my dexterous nature to pick out all these nice things and then put them in the bowl and feed them to the mouth, then it wouldn't be fed. And the mouth said, yeah, and I'm doing all this chewing work and swallowing. And the nose said, yeah, but it wouldn't know if it was good or bad without me. And the eyes said, yeah, but I'm the one, I can see what's good and the good food and everything like that. And they said, and we just feed the stomach, and then the feet came in, and they said, yeah, and after he's nice and full and he's got this big full belly, then I have to carry him around. Said, let's go on strike. Everyone said, strike, strike, strike. So they all the senses went on strike. And meanwhile, the hand decided while he was on strike, he'd try to go out and enjoy on his own and eat something. And all the senses, they stopped working. And then they started to feel, the brain started to feel woozy, like you do at the end of a long fast, a little woozy. And then the feet started to feel tired and the hands started to weaken. And they all met back again together and said, it's not working. What's going wrong? He said, let's start working again. So they started feeding again in the stomach. Meanwhile, the stomach didn't mind. He just took a little rest during this whole thing. And so the Vedas are telling us that you have to feed the stomach. And we're all parts and parcel of the Lord. But you have to feed the center. You have to feed the Lord. And then you'll actually enjoy it. In fact, Prahlad Maharaj gives a wonderful verse in his prayers in which he says that the act of offering something to the Lord is not for the Lord's benefit. It's actually for our benefit. Because the Lord's complete in himself, as we've already read, Om Purnamadak Purnamidam. Everything's emanating from him. In fact, sometimes Indra, he gets a little envious sometimes. He epitomizes this envious position sometimes in the material world when we're working for some result and we see someone doing a little better and we think, oh, well, if they just go away, Like he's done things like with Maharaj Prithu, who was about to do his 100th horse sacrifice. Then Indra came down and he pretended to be a sannyasi and he stole the horse and he fled away with the sacrificial horse. and Maharaj Prithu's son chased after him, and then he realized, oh, I'm chasing a sannyasi, so he let him go. But then Indra, out of fear of that arrow, he let the horse go, but then he did it a couple more times, and each time he took on the dress of a different kind of sannyasi, and he fled away. And finally, Lord Brahma had to come down and say, just let him win. He told Maharaj Prithu, what does it matter if you do 99 or 100 horse sacrifices? He's Indra, let him have the 100. And all similarly, Lord Indra, he had sent these beautiful women to distract the meditation of Narayan Rishi, because he thought through their powerful meditation, maybe they'd take over his position. But what happened? From the body of Lord Narayan manifested these women that were even more beautiful than the ones that Indra had sent. In fact, one of them went back and seduced the members of heaven because she was so beautiful. So they saw that millions of beautiful women were emanating from the body of the Lord. So he doesn't need our offering, actually. But if we offer to the Lord, then we benefit. Then we benefit. So Prahlad Maharaj says it's like when you decorate your face, then you look in the mirror and your face is decorated. So similarly, we're like reflections of Krishna in a sense. And so when we actually decorate Krishna, then we feel decorated. This is the principle of the Ishavasha life, of the God-centered life, is the more we give to Krishna, the more we feed Krishna, we actually feel satisfied. And the more we try to take for ourselves and we go on strike and say, no, I'm going to enjoy, the more we keep aside something separately for ourselves, the more we dry up. And the more we starve, and frustration, because you'd think if you won the super lotto, everyone thinks, if I just won the super lotto, all my problems will go away. Not true. I just read an article that was on the internet a couple of weeks ago about this fellow who won the super lotto, $347 million. And the headline was something about the most miserable man in America. Lost all his friends, lost all his relatives, and you know, he had all this money, but he looked morose, completely morose. We can enjoy separately from Krishna. But if we give to Krishna, then immediately we'll become satisfied. And this is the process of the Ishavasya life, is to organize around how to give everything to Krishna. Yat karoshi, yat ashnashi, yat johoshi, dadasi, yat tapasti, puntiyat, tat kurushva mararpadam. That all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform. This is an important point, too. We shouldn't do austerities separately from Krishna. Sometimes we think, well, I'll fast for, you know, some material benefit. Like maybe I'll please some demigod. Or I'll fast for some political reason. Or something like that. These are all separated interests from Krishna. We fast on Ekadashi. Why? Because it's Hari Vasara. It's Hari's day. We fast for Krishna. And when you fast for Krishna on Janmashtami, and when you fast for Krishna on Gaur Purnima, and on Ekadashi, and you do these austerities, then, yat tapasasi konteya, tat kurushva manarpanam, then you're following this Ishavasya spirit. Do everything for me, Krishna said. Then you'll feel satisfied. Then you'll feel happy because you'll be connected to the center. If you water the root of the tree, then all the branches automatically become satisfied. But if you try to satisfy them independently, you'll never become successful. The tree will dry up. So it's a simple thing, Krishna consciousness, but it's easy to miss because Maya is very convincing. And so we have to remain vigilant in our practice of Krishna consciousness every day so that we can rise above the influence of Rajas and Tamas, especially. This Rajas and Tamas, these are our eternal enemies. They draw us down into the lower modes, into the lower conception of life, where we're simply working hard for nothing. But when we come to sattva, by worshipping the Lord, sattvam rajas tamaiti prakriter gunaistar yukta para purusha eka ihasya daate stityade hari varinshi hariti samja shreyamsi tattva kalu sattva tanun rinam suhu. This verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam says that by worshipping Vishnu, who is above the three modes of material nature, one can attain the highest benefit. Lord Brahma is incarnation of the mode of passion. Lord Shiva, incarnation of the mode of ignorance. Whereas Lord Vishnu, He's in pure goodness. So when you worship Lord Vishnu, then you can derive the highest benefit. Shreyamsi tattva kalu tattva trinam stuhu. For all human beings, if you worship the Lord Vishnu, you attain the highest benefit. What is that? Mission of human life. Partivad darano dhumas tasman agnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajas tasmat sattvam yad brahmadarshanam. You get a darshan of the truth when you come to this position of sattvagun. And you do that by performing devotional service. Mam chayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. If you perform devotional service, how? In an uninterrupted fashion, uninterrupted and unmotivated way, you'll rise above the three modes of material nature and come to the level of Brahman. That's safety. Otherwise, it's a degraded condition for the soul. We're in a profane state in the material world when we allow ourselves to be victimized by the lower modes of nature, like passion and ignorance. We're victimized, and we're punished by that mode until we can come to our senses by hearing the transcendental sound, by taking proper guidance from without and from within. And we have to grab on and worship Lord Vishnu through this process of bhakti yoga, through this God-centered life. Otherwise, it's all lost. The whole civilization, you can build it up and build it up, but if you don't have this foundation of being connected to Krishna, it will collapse. And it will be for naught, and it will be useless. But if you have a simple life and you're connected to God, then your life has value. Ritirartam yapratiyeta, napratiyeta chatmani. Krishna himself is telling Brahma, if it has connection to me, it has value. If it doesn't have connection to me, it's useless. Period. It may look like the most valuable thing. Everyone's chasing it like crazy, trying to catch the most valuable thing, but it has no value. So, Ishavasham idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magrida kasiswadam. Real happiness means to live in Krishna, to live with Krishna, to always connect oneself with Krishna, and to live a simple life. You know, we don't need that much actually to be happy. And Krishna will provide everything. Yadrishya labhasantushto dvandatito vimatsara. Krishna says, a person who is happy with what? Yadrishya. That thing that comes of its own accord. Just live your life according to the Vedic principle of worshiping Krishna. And those things that come naturally of their own accord, accept them as Krishna's mercy. And don't over-endeavor to try to build up an artificial life. And then we'll sail through life. It'll be very easy. Otherwise, it becomes difficult. Microphone to Rakshit Prabhu, please.
In one of the examples you gave earlier, which was like in a dream state, mm-hmm. somebody dreams about a person and has some positive expectations, but finds out, you say, when the dream is over, that it's all gone or it was not real as it was. And also that in real life, somebody depends on somebody, and that it takes a longer time in real life, but then they find out that they either cheated or it was not what they expected it to be. This was given in the context of illusory energy or something that is illusion. Now, actually, in this case, with this example, one seems to be deceived by some individual or person. You have some expectation of some response or something about the person, but they didn't do. And as such, the individual who is deceiving is still a spirit soul, is as such connected to Krishna. It is not really a material element or material energy, where we have the classic case of illusory energy, it may be reflection in darkness because it is material. But when dealing with people where one experiences that they have been not treated properly or deceived, these people are still spirit souls. So are we to then assume that they are acting from lower modes of material nature, that they themselves are victimized by it and are victimizing others?
Well, the laws of karma are intricate and very complicated. And who is the victim and who's the victimizer is difficult to discern. In the discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Maharaj Parikshit comes across Dharma in the form of a bull, he asks him this very question of why he's being beaten by Kali. Kali is there beating him, this bull. And Maharaj Parikshit is incredulous because this has never been seen before until the age of Kali has ushered in that someone would beat a bull. So he asks Dharma in the form of the bull, who is it who's actually victimizing you? And Dharma refuses to become the victim. And he claims that actually, ultimately, it's coming from the Supreme Lord. And that it's because of my misdeeds. He refuses to assign the victimhood or a perpetrator other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So sometimes, you know, because of our involvement in the material nature, one might see somebody as a friend and somebody as an enemy. But Prahlad Maharaj says, we actually have no friends and enemies in this world, he says, except the uncontrolled mind and senses. Those are the real enemies. What we perceive to be friends and enemies on the material side is simply a mental concoction. And in the story of Maharaj Chittaketu, he had prayed for a son, and he could have none, even though he had thousands of wives. So finally, one sage, Angira Rishi, made a potion by doing a special yajna, and he gave him this sweet rice to one of the wives to drink. So the wife took the sweet rice, and she became pregnant. But before the sage had given him this benediction, he had told him that this son will be named Harshashok, means he'll bring happiness and great lamentation also. And Chitraketu thought, well, that's natural. Children do bring happiness and some distress, so I can tolerate that, no problem. But when the son was born, he became extremely happy, and so did his wife, the queen who had given birth. And they began to celebrate and take very nice care of this little baby. And the other wives became envious that they didn't have a son. So they conspired and they poisoned it. And when the king and his queen found out that the love of their life, the apple of their eye, their newly born prince had died, they could not remain conscious. They were so grief-stricken that they'd fall to the ground unconscious. Can you imagine how that feels? This is the suffering of the soul in the material world. Because we become attached to a particular conception of life, that this is mine, and that's this is my son, my house, my nation. People, when they lost their wealth in the crash of the, and during the Depression, a lot of people jumped out of windows. Yeah, it's a fact. Actually, they had money. My grandfather, great grandfather, was a wealthy magnate. He lost most of his money just like that, like a lot of other people in this big crash. And a lot of them just jumped out of windows and did themselves in. So Maharaj Chitraketu became overwhelmed with grief, fell on the ground, and finally Angira came back, and he induced that child to speak. Although the child had died, he brought him back to life temporarily, he brought that jiva back into the body to speak to him and his wife. And he said, oh, jiva soul, where have you gone? Why are you leaving your mother and father here like this, to grieve like this? And the little jiva in the body of that baby looked up and he said, which mother and father? I've had millions of mothers and fathers. Which ones are these? I've been through many, many families, and this, because of my karma, I've passed through, and I've been here for some time. They're only claiming that I'm their son, but how is it I'm their son? And in this way, he spoke knowledge to liberate them. The sage had induced them to, and then they realized, actually, by the association of this great sage, and through this speaking of this jiva soul who'd come back, that actually he's not my son. So one you know, one time a man who worked his whole life to earn a livelihood, he saved all his money and his wealth. He lived very frugally. Why? And this is typical. So he could pass the money on to his sons. Works a whole life, saved, scrimped everything. I'll pass it on to my sons. So then he died, and he left a huge house, and he left a lot of wealth to his sons. In his next life, he took birth in the same neighborhood, but this time as a very downtrodden person who became a cobbler in his next life, which in that town was not a very high profession, fixing other people's shoes. And then at some point in his life, he came back peddling his services from house to house. And he came to the house from his previous life where his now sons lived, and they had been inherited all this wealth from him in their previous life. And he went to the front door. "Can I fix your shoes? Get out of here, old man." And they started beating him with shoes to get him off the property. "Get out, get away." So this is when our friend or our enemy, when we come in contact in different times, we think somebody's my friend, and another time I think he's my enemy, but actually none is true. Actually, all these are simply agents. The living entity is acting as an agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in one way or the other. And while we're involved in karma, and action and reaction in this material world, and we're absorbed in the materialistic conception of life, these living souls actually become deliverers of our karma. But when we come to the Krishna conscious conception of life, then we see actually that no one is my actual friend or enemy, but they're all coming as messengers of the Lord. When someone comes to a devotee and inflicts some kind of so-called suffering, the devotee accepts that as the Lord's personal message, that now you should become serious. He sees it in relationship with the Lord. And this is the pinnacle of spiritual vision, which is described by Lord Brahma in his prayers, where he says that these reactions that come to me, even if delivered through another living entity, I see them as I've caused them myself, but they're actually messages from the Lord. He's come very kindly to give me this reminder to not stay in this material world, to come back home, back to Godhead. So in the karmic life, we may see friends, enemies, we may feel the victim, but in spiritual life, the devotee actually sees that the Lord is giving his mercy in all circumstances. This is elevated vision. And it's also part of the Ishavasya vision that's being described in the Sri Upanishad.
So that is like the view that Queen Kunti has taken, when there is distress or suffering, she says, "Let more come, so my karma is eventually washed off."
Thank you, yes, good point.
How does a devotee perceive, and how, you know, when he's trying to see it as you were explaining it, when that friend is a devotee and he's the one causing the stress on you, and a devotee that you see is sincere, but he's having problems and whatnot, and he promises a lot of things and whatnot, that he's actually causing a lot of grief on you, a lot of stress, victimizing you, not purposely. But how does a devotee perceive that when he's trying to love his brother back and see, you know, be compassionate?
You know, it depends on your level of advancement, how you can take these things. This tatenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjane evatmakritam vipakam. Lord Brahma says that the advanced living entity is always praying for the mercy of the Lord, and that he accepts any kind of reactions that come to him as the Lord's mercy, that it's taking away his previous karma, and that he deserves more, actually. And when something good comes to him, he accepts it as that he didn't deserve it, but the Lord sent him that. in our relationship with devotees, then, you know, we have to be very careful because devotees are very special. And we have to be careful not to become envious or offend devotees. And if there's a case when a devotee apparently becomes our enemy, or we're getting, you know, an offensive mentality towards a devotee because we're too close, we should move back a little bit. Because the further back you move, then you can respect somebody from a distance. And if you get too close and you become too critical, better to move back. Because becoming critical of devotees is a sure prescription for failing in spiritual life. So we should not develop a critical attitude towards devotees especially. Lord Chaitanya warned against this. So,
but if you see the devotee doing that, and you're the person that is, you know, attempt to be compassionate, and you see that person's doing that, but you're in that situation.
Doing what? I'm sorry.
And you know you can't get out of that situation at this time, so you have to go through it because you see it as Krishna, and that it's a learning process. What does the devotee do? That's the one getting victimized by the one who's critical.
Well, it really depends on the situation, but. If there's a situation where you're being actually victimized by another devotee for some reason, then you should take it up with more advanced devotees about the situation. Say, what should I do about this particular thing? And see if there's a remedy for that. And also, you know, many times we should tolerate. But, you know, if there's a transgression of some kind, rather than deal with it directly, we can take it up with more advanced devotees or senior devotees or those who are in a position of authority and say, guess what? You know, somebody's really taking it out on me. What should I do about it? And then work it out so that we don't create any immediate friction or do something that we'll regret. So we have to be intelligent and deal with it in a practical way. Okay, so we've heard a little bit of Sri Upanishad, which is such a powerful book. It's a nice book to give out, too. I gave one to my bank teller the other day. She's from Fiji. And she always sees that, you know, I have tilak on or something like that. So she was asking, and I gave her a Sri Upanishad. And she was very happy, and I was happy to give her that book. So bring Sri Upanishad with you when you go out tomorrow and to your banker. Hopefully you're going frequently. And give out a Sri Upanishad to your banker, your baker, your candlestick maker. And this is a nice book to pass on to people. It's very introductory and have great effect.